It's going down, and you're invited for what they selling. We ain't buying. There is no running, there is no hiding. There's only fighting or dying. It's going down, and you're invited for what they selling. We ain't buying. There is no running, there is no hiding. There's only fighting or dying.
It's Going Down is a digital community center from anarchist, anti-fascist, autonomous, anti-capitalist, and anti-colonial movements. Our mission is to provide an autonomous and resilient platform to publicize and promote revolutionary theory and action.
Go to itsgoingdown.org for daily updates. Check out our online store for ways to donate and rate and follow us on iTunes if you like this podcast. All right, this is the It's Going Down podcast. We're joined here today with somebody from the Occupied Southwest Distro. Do you just want to introduce yourself real quick?
Yeah, my name's Alfredo. I'm part of Occupied Southwest Distro. We're an anarchist distro that operates out of Phoenix, Arizona. And we participated or engaged quite a lot with the Red for Ed Arizona teacher walkout that happened in the past week or so. So that's kind of
awesome. And there is a Occupied Southwest Twitter account, which is at times very funny and shit-talking and even on the verge of shit-posting.
Right.
But
yeah, I like it.
Exactly. Yeah, definitely worth checking out. I enjoy it. But let's just talk about, I mean, when this thing first kind of started, when you heard that there was going to be a mass teacher strike, what were your thoughts?
Well, we have been following it for a while. After like what the stuff in West Virginia happened and it spread to Oklahoma and Kentucky, I had an idea that, you know, maybe there are people trying to do something here too, right? So, just because of the way that the schools are, like everybody in this state, you know, knows how the education system is, that it's really, really bad. So, you know, I thought maybe there were some people trying to agitate for that here. So I did a search on Twitter and I found a couple of people at first. One of them was Noah Carvelis, who was like the, I guess, figurehead of AZ Ed United, which was really like the, kind of the engine behind getting, you know, people organized around having a walkout. And they were trying to push this hashtag Red for Ed. And their idea was at first that the reason it was called Red for Ed is because they were trying to organize people on every Wednesday to go to their schools and wear red, like teachers, you know, and then they would take pictures of it and submit it. But I mean, it was just a few of them at first, you know, but over time, I mean, it took just a few days. And then I guess they had a Facebook group that just like blew up. You know, and people were inviting each other and sharing it a lot. There was a lot of like sharing of teachers just kind of posed outside of the school wearing red. So we started following this pretty early on. I think that was back in March. It was the week right after West Virginia had gone on strike. So that's how we first became aware of it. And over time, you know, it just kind of like continued to snowball, get more support. There were a lot more people taking part in these like, you know, like these Wednesday days where they would wear red, right? There was a lot of people, a lot more pictures coming up, a lot more tweets on the hashtag. So, we kind of started following it pretty early and putting information out there from our distro Twitter account about it. And just following it. And then kind of what happened is, you know, as more participation started to happen, different things started to happen. And like, it started opening up the possibility that there would be a strike or so. It didn't seem like initially that was the intention AZ Ed United. You know, that's the social media, Noah Carvelis, right? People that didn't really initially seem to be like the aim that they were going for. I mean, And you could really see that with, like, I was listening, like, recently, or I guess there was another audio report, right, about the strike that happened in Arizona with some teachers.
And, right, we talked to two teachers.
Right, yeah, yeah, yeah. And they actually mentioned an event that I was thinking about, too. And it's that basically this movement was kind of just confined, you know, to, like, okay, everybody wear red. And, uh-huh. like, something that they would often say in their tweets or on social media was, do see what's the plan, you know, just kind of, like, deferring to the state to see, like, what, you know, what's the state going to do about this kind of thing. But then what happened is this district in, I think it's Glendale, which is in West Phoenix, called the Pendergast school district, just called for a sick out of their own.
Sounds like a Halo character.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Right. 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 They called for a sick out of their own, and it was like one school that did it. And then it was like seven that just followed them in this district, and it shut this whole district down for a day. And these people went to the Capitol that day or the next day and like demonstrated, you know, they were like, fuck that. We're not going to have like, we're not going to like just wear red on Wednesday. Right. We're just going to go for it. So the reason I say that, I don't think that it was exactly like the intention of AZ Ed United to start a strike is because of like the statement that they released afterwards was kind of like, it was supportive, I would say, kind of passively. So, it was kind of like, well, you know, this isn't really us, but like, we understand why these people are doing it, you know, but they weren't telling anybody to like participate in it. It was just kind of like that. But I mean, really the energy of it got way beyond them. And I think that at a point they just kind of, you know, like, I guess the self-appointed leadership or the organization of the teachers themselves decided that like a strike was going to happen, you know, whether anybody wanted it or not, or whoever wanted it or not. Right. Certainly the union right. was not supportive of the strike. Certainly not.
Can you just, I mean, for people listening, to some people that may seem as a strange thing to say, can you just explain what you mean by that? How could the union not support the strike?
I mean, Arizona's a right to work state, right? So they really can't come out and support. I mean, you know, kind of according to them, right? And according to like some of the teachers we were talking to at the strike, they can't really come out and like call on people to strike because it's technically illegal in this state to go on strike like that. You know, they can get sued. They can potentially get all the teachers can get their teacher certificates revoked, which isn't going to happen if it's all of them. Right. But, they really, I mean, just kind of watching their social media accounts and the way that they were engaging with it, or really not engaging with it for a long time. They just kind of seem to always be like a step behind. Right. So, I mean, they were supportive of people like doing, you know, just everybody wearing red, right, and taking pictures. But that was kind of about as far as it went. I mean, they had to get on board, you know, at the end, they had to get on board. So when the strike began, you know, it was just like after things just kept escalating and kept escalating, there was a lot, you know, a lot of engagement on social media. There was a lot of like very clear support from the public, where people would like paint their cars, you know, with like messages or slogans in support of the teachers. We saw a lot of that here. And then they called a press conference, you know, and I mean, the press conference, it was like they were almost apologizing to everybody that people were about to take action, where it was like, you know, something that the media said a lot was like, you know, like, oh, you're inconveniencing teachers and you're going to inconvenience students, right? And that was something that they kept saying. And during the strike, before the strike, well before the strike, actually, they were continuing to say stuff like that, and also just kind of passively reminding people that a strike would be illegal. Like, it was pretty funny. Particularly, I'm thinking of like the ABC affiliate out here would always have these segments, right, where they would like go to schools and they would interview people about like, well, do you think Arizona teachers should take action? They weren't going to say strike, you know, but they had kind of caught on that people were starting to, that something was happening. Right. So, they would go to the schools and they would like talk to, you know, talk to like these like parents who were always just magically happened to be against the teachers, right? You know, like people like, well, I, you know, it's going to inconvenience my child. And, you know, there are just other ways to do this, right? Like, and I mean, who even, like, my thought really is like, how are these people qualified to speak on anything, right? Let alone like a labor dispute. But they kept doing that and putting out that kind of coverage. And then at the very end of these segments, they would always like end it with this like passive threat, like, oh, you know, we looked it up and according to state law, a strike would be illegal. And then it would just like end the segment, but they would just like repeatedly do that. Right. So, then when a strike was actually called, it was this like 30-minute press conference at the Arizona Capitol. And it was after, I think the week before, they just had this like mass rally with like thousands and thousands of teachers at the state Capitol. You know, it was pretty clear at that point what direction the energy was kind of going towards or what was going to happen, right? That they really couldn't contain this any longer. But they had this press conference at the Capitol where they're just like, we're really sorry. You know, just like they're like begging the public to forgive them for going on strike, you know, for like 30 minutes.
This is the teachers' union.
Yeah. And then Arizona Ed United as well. Like, I mean, there's representatives from both of those things.
And Arizona Ed United is not the union. It's something different.
Yeah, I don't want to call it an organization. It's not an organization. It's just like it was really just like a Facebook group. Like, you know what I mean? Okay. Like sometimes things.
So that's kind of like the self-organized face of the resistance, though.
Yeah, exactly. But it has its own like figureheads and things like that. I mean, there's a lot of lively debate inside of this group. You know, there's a lot of like difference of opinion, but it's kind of an entity of itself in a way, I guess. It's kind of, self-organized kind of resistance there, organized via social media. But yeah, it was just like 30 minutes of kind of flogging themselves for going on strike, you know?
Wow. I mean, it really shows you when you're in that instance, just like how much all the different sections of society are trying to organize themselves against this thing happening. I mean, the media, the police, the state, the union apparatus is all basically saying like, please don't let this happen.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
But at the same time, like everybody knows that, you know, it's going to explode because it is. I'm curious, one thing real quick. When you saw people like marking slogans on their cars in solidarity, did you feel like that kind of like that solidarity people were having, like, what was the context of that? Was it just like, you know, life is shitty and like these people are fighting and, you know, we see ourselves in them? Or was it people that were somehow connected to the teacher strike, or was it a mix of both?
I'm not entirely sure how much like class consciousness exactly spread here. I mean, just everybody knows that the schools here are horrible. You know, it's just like, it's not a secret. You know, I mean, I graduated from these schools not even that long ago, right? And, you know, I mean, it's really real. It's like 40-1 teacher, you know, student to teacher ratio there. There's like no school counselors. These schools in a lot of ways are just like falling apart. Tuition in terms of like university is just crazy expensive, like tens of thousands of dollars for in-state tuition just to go to like ASU, which is basically, you know, has like such a high acceptance rate and like, just like, I think like 100,000 students or whatever will just kind of take whoever, honestly. You know, I mean, it's just a bad situation here in terms of education. Everybody knows it. And so I think that, you know, people like, you know, people just knew why the teachers were going on strike. Everybody knew why it was happening, you know?
Right.
I think that I read somewhere there was like a poll. It was like 80% of people supported it or something like that. It was a lot of support.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I think that's the other thing too, is like this constant, the system trying to, you know, subdue people or try to make them think that the world is something they're not. I mean, they're trying to be like, oh, it's illegal. And, you know, how dare you inconvenience like these children when it's like, you know, you're sticking a kid in a classroom with like 40 other kids, you know, they're not learning already. You know, the conditions are shit. The teachers are getting paid. I mean, I think Arizona was like had one of the worst pay scales in the nation.
It's like 48th or something.
Yeah, I mean,
I think,
you know, it's hot as fuck out there, you know, it's like all these things are happening.
I think it improved a little bit. I'm pretty sure when I was going to school a few years ago, it was like 51st, and there was like some territory or something that was like ahead of Arizona.
Right. Okay, so the strike takes off, and then you just want to talk about, you know, what did you all do? What did you all see, like, once people were just out there in mass? Because, I mean, there were lots of people that were out on the streets.
Yeah, really. So we decided that we were going to go do outreach at it. You know, it was a good opportunity for us to do that. That's generally what the distro does, is that when there's, like, a large mass of people and we feel like we can go engage with them, whether that be, like, First Friday Art Walk or some type of political event, you know, where people will be stationary for a little while. We'll try to go and table and engage with people and talk to people. So we decided we were going to go and go out there and, like, talk to people and also distribute literature. And we had curated some stuff that was, like, we tried our best to curate things that were, like, relevant, you know. We had, like, some strike guides, just stuff, like, talking about, like, about strikes and kind of what could go wrong with them and how to avoid those things, and like self-organization stuff about like school occupations, because there was a lot of students down there.
Awesome. What kind of conversations did you get into while you're doing that?
There was a lot of people who were really supportive of like what we were doing. There's a lot of teachers that came up to us who were like, oh yeah, you know, I've tried to get my kids to read Kropotkin. You know what I mean? Like,
awesome.
Things like that. It kind of went like, it was kind of interesting. There's some people who were kind of apprehensive to approach us just because they didn't know what we were really about. I would say that the best conversations we had actually came on the last day of the strike, but I want to get to that in a little bit. Sure. But you know, we were out there tabling, which is kind of like, it was just kind of like the normal way it kind of goes for us. You know, some people coming up to us really supportive about it. They get like our contact information. Some people coming up to us like, oh, do you really think anarchy could work? You know, kind of saying that in like a condescending way.
In the middle of a completely
right,
a self-work situation. Yeah. Right.
So in terms of the numbers on the first day of the strike, I mean, I don't think that there have been that many people in the streets here since SB 1070 happened.
Right.
I think there was like 100,000 people on some march for SB 1070. And there was like 75,000 people. So we got to the Capitol and we got to the Capitol around like 10 a.m. And, you know, it's like 102 degrees or something like that. It's really hot, but there's like 10,000 people or something, like I would estimate, already there. And then this march sets off for the Capitol from like a couple of miles away or like something like that. And, we get there, you know, and it like the march gets the Capitol and everybody's like cheering. And it's just like, I mean, just this mass of people, right? Like as far as you can see everywhere, everyone's wearing red. There's a lot of different people out there. Something that was pretty cool, you know, is a lot of like teachers just took the opportunity just to bring red flags as well to it.
Uh-huh.
Which I thought was pretty cool. You know what I mean? I'm not like a stay communist or whatever, but I think that it kind of maybe has a different connotation to them, perhaps. I can hope that. But yeah, there's just like a huge mass of people. People are like pretty excited and pumped up, and the energy is really high. And there were some speakers out there, but mostly it was just like people kind of like in circles, all talking to each other, people meeting each other for the first time. We walked around. We took some like photos. There was a small group of counter protesters from this local racist organization called the Patriot Movement Arizona. They're pretty well known here to a lot of anti-fascists, anti-racists, or just like local activists, because they kind of come out to things and just try to provoke people, you know.
Now, is this the group that's connected to the people that went to the mosque and tried to vandalize?
Yep, it's them. Same people.
Okay. And what was their deal? I mean, what were they And what was their reason for being there? Did they have like an ideological reason, like we're against labor unions or workers striking, or why were they there?
Yeah, it's this idea they have in their head that, like, you know, the right wing generally, I think, has this idea that like the schools are spreading communism or something like that. Like,
that's really what they.
Yeah, they that's really think their that. Reason. And so then they were going after this guy Noah, who's like a figurehead, right? For being like a socialist or something. And it seems like maybe that's true, actually, because they pulled up some like stuff from this guy's like social media accounts of him with like, I think it was like Lenin or something, photos, and like some other people we talked to seemed to maybe think that that could have been the case also. I mean, not that it really, like, you know, that's entirely relevant or whatever, but they're really upset about that guy. But yeah, they were out there. I was just kind of like walking around listening to them talk, and they were just saying things like, oh wow, what a coincidence, all the teachers are wearing red, you know, like red is the color of communism or whatever. Right. It's just like in their heads they think that, like, you know, all these teachers out here are like just communists. But they came out there and they were like armed.
Did people have a reaction to them, or they're like, whatever, it's Phoenix, there's always going to be like five, you know, idiots with, you know, automatic weapons just standing around?
Yeah, there were people around them like trying to talk to them.
Yeah,
you know, like trying to like understand from their point of view or whatever, or like try to engage in a debate with them. And I was just telling them, I was like, hey, these are the same people, like, you know, a few days before that, actually, like, that was on Thursday, so like 6 days before that, the same group was at the Capitol, and they were pretty, they were a lot deeper, actually, at this thing where there was a March for Our Lives event. And right. They were just going around at that thing. They brought guns to it, you know, to harass these like college kids, or not college kids, these high school kids who had locked themselves down in the Arizona State Senate building and then the Arizona House of Representatives building. And so, you know, they brought like guns to like mess with these kids or whatever. And they're on video just with these like megaphones yelling at these kids, like making them cry. I watched them assault a cameraman. You know, I watched them assault a camera person at the end of this event. They were just yelling fake news, fake news, and just like attacking these guys. Great. I was like, man, I'm in the shittiest timeline watching this happen. Yeah.
I mean, I don't want to spend too much time on these.
Right,
idiots,
right, right.
I mean,
but
it just, to me, it's funny because they exemplify everything that they say is like the you know, the caricature of the social justice warrior, the leftist, you know, somebody that has to be everywhere screaming about everything and like complaining about it and just like really uninformed and just like trying to thrust themselves into whatever situation to like just, you know, get their bumper sticker, you know, slogan. Into that moment and really having no agency within that, you know, that situation, but just always trying to interject themselves, you know, largely through social media.
Right.
Cause I mean, it's clear. I mean, you know, five people, even if they have weapons, you know, they're standing in the middle of this massive thing that was happening. I mean, they don't have any agency in that situation.
Yeah, absolutely not. Absolutely not. I mean, in a way, I felt like it was almost like better for them to show up. Just, you know, it makes it clear to people who the enemy is, right?
How can we imagine a world beyond prisons and police, borders and surveillance?
Rust Belt Abolition Radio is an abolitionist media and movement building project based in Detroit, Michigan.
Each monthly episode amplifies the voices of those impacted by mass incarceration and explores ongoing work in the movement to abolish the carceral state and racial capitalism.
Tune in to Rust Belt Abolition Radio here on the Channel Zero Network and visit www.rustbeltradio.org to learn more.
The number one public enemy, split personality, yeah, and both rap for anarchy, keeping my beard long like pops in the 70s, burning flags, screaming fuck the Kennedys, many see me as a hoodlum, at best a good bum, letting our anger over bass and snare drums, fucking up eardrums of those with high income, holding King Kong good stuff for ransom, leaving Madeleine in labor pains while I'm bombing trains, trying to bring back the days of 36 in Spain, and y'all claim I'm too negative.
Radical Underground is a podcast that connects underground music with radical politics from around the world. So if you like anarchy and good music about kicking fascists in the face, check us out on Channel Zero, SoundCloud, iTunes, and anywhere else you can find us.
Sick of your right-wing bullshit, it's a fucking disgrace. So let the vegan persuading, kicking you in the face.
Well, just moving on, as the strike progressed, you know, what happened? Was there an attempt to try to, like, you know, make the strike go away? What happened over the coming days? Did people camp out? You know, just kind of paint a picture for us.
Yeah, I mean, so people, so the strike lasted from that Thursday, and that was May, or it was in April, right? So there's the 26th, they went on strike, and it lasted until the 3rd, so it was like a week long. And basically, I mean, the teachers were having rallies every day at the Capitol. They would call on supporters there every day. There would be like tens of thousands of people there, you know? I mean, after like the first couple of days of the strike, I mean, the weekend came, it was kind of dwindling down a little bit. It was also really hot, you know, and I think that kind of was dampening the participation. I felt like that was like something that the state kind of was counting on to happen. Because as time goes on, you know, I mean, like, I think that they were counting on them not really being able to continue these like large demonstrations, right, when it's like 105 degrees outside. But people continue to go to the Capitol. The state really was not trying to do anything about it. There was people who were like posting on social media that they had gotten like emails back from state representatives telling them like, well, you know, if you don't like it, then how about you run against me, you know, in the next election? Or right, like they would go really early in the morning to try to catch the House representatives and senators going into work. And, you know, these people would just like yell at them, like, get back to work. Like that happened. It was like on video. You can watch it. But that was kind of going on. The next week was Monday. So the strike entered the second week, right? Or it's kind of like second week. And on Monday, again, like the weather actually got really nice here again. It was like in the 70s or something. And so there was like 50,000 people at the Capitol again. It was this really big event. But there was really not a whole lot of movement from the state on this thing. And then so what shifted things a lot is that what happened on Wednesday, which was May the 2nd, the day after May Day, right? And that's when the union came in and basically was like, the state is going to vote on a budget deal tonight, and the strike is going to be over tomorrow. We're going to return to school tomorrow. And so then this was immediately picked up by the local media, right? And so like they're just putting it out there like, okay, strike's going to end tomorrow. The walkout's going to end tomorrow. But nobody had actually seen what was in the state budget deal yet. And then so this information was spread, right, that the strike was going to end. So that gets to like the general public. Of course, people have kids and they need to know whether the strike is going to continue or not. So then the rank and file just says, we're not going to go back to school tomorrow. We have to see what's in the budget. And so they reversed that, right? Decided that they were going to continue the strike. But I feel like that was really – that really, like, damaged the image, you know, of the strike in the public mind, just because it created a lot of confusion. You know, it didn't look very good, right? There was, like, a lot of, like hearsay. Nobody was really sure what was going on. So the state actually was going to vote on a budget deal that they had come up with. And so Arizona Educators United had called on all on their supporters to come to the Capitol at night for this like session, this like special late night session of the House of Representatives and the Senate to try to pass this thing through. And so we went down there and we did like a Periscope of it. We actually had a lot of interesting conversations with people there. We weren't aware of when we showed up. We weren't aware of what was in budget. So we were just like talking to a lot of teachers there about what was going on. And a lot of them are really upset by it because what it was is the state is going to So initially, like, the way that the state had tried to respond to the strikes was with this deal that the governor, Doug Ducey, was calling the 20 by 2020, which is one of the demands of the teachers' strike was that they would get a 20% pay increase, right? But he decided you'll get a 20% pay increase, but it's going to happen by the year 2020, and it's tied to expected state revenue. And that, like, you know what I mean? Like it just seemed really weird. And so people had initially rejected that, but they basically came back with this same offer. But the way that it works is, so it's like $400 million in total that the state had allocated in the budget for teacher raises. And that included around like $100 million for things like maintenance, like hiring more staff, things like buying books and stuff like that. And then there's $250 million around there. I think maybe, $250 million or so for teacher raises. However, that money is given to the districts to basically like entrust them with spending that money on giving people raises. And because of the way that it's going to be divided up, one of the teachers that we were talking to was explaining to us that like not everybody was going to be getting a 20% raise. Some of them, one of the teachers we were talking to said that he was only going to be getting like a 4% raise. And he was really upset by that, you know, and there was a lot of people that we were talking to that also said the same thing, that they were only going to be getting like a single digit raise, you know, out of the budget deal that,
The LA Times reported that people would initially get like a 5% raise or something, and then they would like a year later they would get another raise.
Yeah, that's the way they're saying that it might happen. But the people we were talking to said that it was, you know, for them, because of the way that the money was going to flow to the districts, it was probably only going to be like a single percent raise or something like that in the end.
They did allocate a large sum of money to the schools, though, correct?
Yeah, it's $100 million. For the schools,
which is, you know, minuscule in some regard.
Right. And at the same time, you know, in November, there's going to be this like ballot initiative to expand charter school funding, basically by the same amount, you know, just to further decimate the public education system. But the GOP is really trying to push that through the exact same amount, right, that they're giving to the schools to try to fix themselves. So, but the general problem, though, was that we would talk to people and be like, okay, like what will you guys do, like if you only get that kind of raise? And they just didn't really know what to do, you know. They just didn't really have
right.
ideas of what they should do. They're like, well, we can't really do anything about it. Like, this person we were talking to was like mad. They were like, well, you know, I feel really betrayed, the fact that we launched like the biggest strike in the state's history, right? And I'm gonna go home with like 5%.
It's
really
I think the thing about these situations is that, like, the, you know, the working class is learning out of the West Virginia teacher strike. I mean, it learned that, you know, basically the lesson out of that is that, you know, the union is going to come back and say like, hey, this shitty contract, you should accept it. And then the hurdle, like from what we've heard from teachers in West Virginia, is that what they told everybody else was that the hurdle that you're going to have to get over is not initially going out on strike, but it's rejecting that union contract that they're going to try to ram down your throat. And it's basically if you can get over that hump. And it seems like in Arizona that that's the one that, you know, basically broke the movement per se, was, you know, people, you know, coming to a point where they couldn't like imagine basically continuing on from where they were, you know, basically saying like, well, you know, fuck that, this is shit, you know, we're going to continue with the strike.
Yeah, exactly. And there was actually people we talked to who told us that their schools were just going to go on like wildcat strike the day afterwards, and it didn't happen. But, or as far as I'm aware, it didn't happen. But it was just, it was just kind of sad, you know, to go around and talk to people and like nobody we talked to supported it in any way, but they just felt like that was kind of really the only thing that was left to them.
It's a learning experience, and also it's an opportunity because, I mean, you know, the other thing is that all these different states, you know, can start thinking about, you know, how do we link up and have a general strike?
Yeah.
You know, or or a bigger strike, or at least when we go out, how do we, you know, circumvent basically the authority of a union bureaucracy who's just as concerned about instituting austerity and a class war agenda as, you know, the state is.
Yeah, exactly. Another thing that was important is that, like, the initial demands of the teachers actually went far beyond just a pay increase. They wanted to, like, expand the definition, I think it was, of, like, education worker to include, like, basically anybody involved in, like, in, like, the reproduction, right, of, like, the education systems. That's, like the service workers there, you know, people who teach students with special needs, right. People like that, right? They also wanted those people to be able to get a 20% pay increase.
People that don't have degrees that are just, you know, working at the school.
Yeah, exactly. Which was, I thought was pretty, like, a pretty progressive demand. And
yeah.
And then just, like, rolling back tax cuts and things like that. And their idea was to tie the pay increase to a tax on, you know, a tax on, like, wealthy Arizonans, right? Which the Democrats are putting, right. I think they're putting forth a ballot measure in November. And this is where kind of they're telling people to put their hopes now, right? Is they're putting forth a ballot measure in November to try to, like, tax like the top 1% of Arizonans, I think it was, or like some, you know, some bracket, and then protect that money for education. It was kind of interesting. A lot of the weird solutions people were throwing around. One of them was just to, like, legalize marijuana here.
Yeah.
Use that to pay for schools in a way, but, like, you know what I mean? Like, the kind of public perception of that was kind of weird. Really get a lot of traction.
And I think this is where the anarchist position is, like, actually very strong, is because, you know, our whole position is one that, like, you know, the thing we should do is fight for what we want, and to make the situation ungovernable is the easiest way to force the elites to, you know, grant concessions. But moreover, like, the stuff that we really want, which is to completely change these institutions, you know, is not on the table within capitalism. So if we're going to do that, we're going to have to, you know, take over society and completely remake it.
Right.
But at the same time, I mean, like, if you've ever been in one of these struggles where it's, like, over a budget, I mean, you know, you've been stuck in those meetings where somebody, like, you know, spends 5 days locked in a room making the people's budget and, you know, stuff like you're saying, like, we're going to sell weed and we're going to genetically modify you know, cactuses and sell them on the internet and make money, and that's how we're going to pass the budget or something like that, which is, like, obviously not going to work. But, I mean, it just – also, like, all the shit you were talking about with, like, the – you know, the different politicians, like, saying go back to work. I mean, like, the governor posing for pictures with, like, those MAGA trolls and stuff. I mean, it's just, like, politics becomes very clear what it is. It's, you know, it's a mirage that hides this, you know, immense system of force and violence that has its own interest, which is not aligned with us.
Right.
So, I don't know. I just, we've been talking for a while, but just in closing, I mean, any kind of major thoughts you want to leave people with? Because, I mean, these strikes are not going away. As we're talking, there's other strikes that are planned, other protests. You know, we highly encourage anarchists and anti-authoritarians, autonomists, to go out and interact with these strikes, you know, whether you're a worker or a community member or just somebody in the area. And I'm just curious if you could, like, impart on people, based on your experience, you know, what would be, you know, intelligent interventions based on, you know, what happened in Arizona.
Yeah. I mean, I would say definitely I would encourage more anarchist participation in these things. You know, there were, like, I mean, as far as I'm aware, there wasn't really a whole lot of it here when it happened. I mean, so I would encourage that, of course. I mean, really a lesson that I thought about during the strikes is that these relationships should have really just been built ahead of time. Right. But, I mean, now, you know, now we kind of know more of, like, our people, I suppose, through the strike. So we're hoping to, like, continue to build on those relationships and cultivate those networks better. I don't know exactly what it would take to kind of change the situation, whereas you were saying, like, just, you know, kind of open people's minds to the possibilities of making it ungovernable so they can actually get the kinds of things they want. And it is kind of a weird position to be, like, an anarchist and going out there where I'm not, I mean, for myself, just speaking for myself, I'm not necessarily trying to preserve, like, the system of public education as we know it, right? But I think it's important to engage with people who are trying to like improve their conditions and who are at odds with the state. But yeah, I mean, I guess that's kind of what I would say in parting, is that it's important for anarchists, anti-authoritarians, people like that, to go out and actually engage with these things and get a feel for them on the ground. And try to put better ideas into people's minds, or try to bring better ideas to the table, right? That's kind of what I would say.
Right. And also a key point is like, you know, keeping those relationships. Cause I mean, this stuff isn't going to go away. This could just be, you know, the opening scene to a larger, you know, whole thing. And, definitely keeping those relationships, in place, you know, having people's phone numbers, so the next time something like this pops off, it's a lot easier to, you know who to talk to.
Exactly.
Thanks so much for joining us. Again, check out Occupied Southwest Distro. Awesome resource in the so-called Southwest of the United States. And thanks for coming on the program, and best of luck to you.
Yeah, thanks. Thanks for having us.
This has been the It's Going Down podcast. Check itsgoingdown.org for daily updates, columns, action reports, and news. Go to itsgoingdown.org/shop to support us. And follow us on all social media platforms. IGD, your daily resource for insurgent proletarian life.